Podcast with Amy Lawrence.
Yeah! Now listen, some of y'all might know this and some of y'all don't. Some of y'all might be with this and some of y'all won't. But listen, let me clear my throat.
Special dedication going out to everybody here in Bahama Bay in Philadelphia. Here we go now, check it out.
Yeah, rock to the rhythm of the funky rhyme so I can get busy just one more time to the beat and you don't quit. It's that old school rap with that new school hit. I bet you never knew, but now you know. I'm the undisputed king of this disco, and I never let the mic, might not tire me no more.
There's DJ Amy rip up the whole dang flow.
So look at it here. Check the flavor of the rhythm I wrote. And while I got a chance here, let me clear my throat. Oh! Have mercy, babe. Ha! I hope you don't mind. Let me clear my throat.
This is After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
Now, if y'all want to party like we do, if y'all want to party like us, let me say,
well, another producer candidate eliminated from contention. Maybe, just maybe, there's a saving grace for Manny because he swears he did not preview that piece of musical production and didn't know that it was me who was doing my best and only rap imitation.
That was Radio Gold. Who put that together? Was that Jay?
Actually, it wasn't. That's way back. That goes back to when I was hosting After Hours on the weekends.
Oh, man.
And here's the little known secret. I have to tell this part every time. I did that dry. There was no music it when I was recording it. That goes back to Tom and Isaac and our Dallas affiliate, 105.3 The Fan, who asked me to be part of Yo Roger Raps. And you hear Roger, his voice there in the middle. He's much cooler than me. Anyway, so yes, it seems as though every single fill-in producer, because you know the 80s and 90s are back, baby, they love that open. And some of them, they swear they didn't know. Manny swears he didn't know and wasn't trying to embarrass me, but I don't know.
I was not trying, but that was golden. I want to listen to that again because that was amazing.
That's a negative, Ghost Rider.
Fine, I'll do it off air. By the way, you say the 90s are back. Yours truly was born in 97, so do what you wish with that information.
The 90s are back, baby. Manny is a product of the 90s, which, okay, gives you some of the juice back that you just lost by playing that for the fans on a Monday morning. Yeah, wake up. Sorry about that. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We're here in studio to kick off another work week. And, yeah, we've got the hodgepodge, baby. But I love when we've got the Olympics and we can draw from a lot of different events and stories and golden moments. And sometimes it's the opposite. It's the sad. It's the agony. It's the tears that come with being so close and yet still so far away, or working for years and years for this moment and then in that moment not able to perform the way that they want. For those of you who love gymnastics, Jade Carey of Team USA, she was part of that silver medal in the team competition going back to Tokyo when Simone Biles could not compete. And when she pulled out and the rest of the team had to move forward without her, they ended up winning silver. Jade was part of that. She won a gold medal on the floor exercise even after the all-around was done. And this was an event in which she had high hopes of medaling again and fell three times in the qualifying. And so heartbreaks for her. Oh, thinking about the French women's gymnastics team as well. They had so many opportunities to be able to qualify for the team competition, the team final, I should say. And time after time, they fell. They missed opportunities. And so it was really hard to see them in tears after the fact, too. They don't end up qualifying for the team final competition that comes up on Tuesday. And yet here they are after years and years of targeting these Olympics, knowing they would be in Paris, knowing they'd have the home fans on their side and unable to capitalize on that home field advantage, that home court advantage, if you will. So yeah, along with the thrill of victory comes the agony of defeat and being so close and yet not able to capitalize. And I don't know that this is agony, but for Gretchen Walsh, an American swimmer, she held the world record. She does hold the world record in the 100 meter butterfly on the women's side. And she was expected to be in contention for a gold medal in the pool on Sunday. And she certainly was, except at the wall, she is tracked down and caught by a fellow American, Tori Husk. And so, yeah, you can see Gretchen's face and why, of course, she's happy for her teammate, but why she would be disappointed on the medal stand when it's not her who's wearing the gold medal. And then you realize Tori's story, which was told, Tori's story, that wasn't on purpose, Tori's journey, which was shared there on Sunday as part of the broadcast that, you know, 3 years ago in Tokyo, she missed a medal by 1/100th of a second in that event. And what sweet redemption for her to come back 3 years later and catch the gold medalist in, well, the gold medalist, but also the world record holder in that event in the final, say, 25 to 30 meters. And she eclipses her at the wall. And wow. So, yes, the thrill of victory, also the agony of defeat and how 1/100th of a second can make a difference. Right. And so that's what the Olympics are all about. And on this stage that only comes around every 4 years, in this case, three, but it's an aberration. You can understand why it's everything to these athletes. And many of them won't have a chance to compete again in 4 years. So to me, the sense of urgency and the emotion, the blood, sweat, tears that are poured into it and seeing these journeys play out and the end of the story for many of them play out in front of us on the world stage. There's so much that's wrapped up into it. And so that's why I get wrapped up in it as well. So my favorite Olympic moments from the weekend, gosh, I put the list out on our social at A-Law Radio or on our Facebook page. And I would love to hear from you, go through some of mine in this final hour here. But for sure, men's basketball captivating a lot of fans to start these games. You had celebrities that were there in person to be able to watch, including Spike Lee. A lot of the Americans were greeting him. But what a cool moment for Steph Curry, who hits a three in the first half against Serbia. And that's his first ever points in an Olympic event because this is his Olympic debut at 36 years old. And then you've got Kevin Durant, who is cleared to play less than an hour before they tip off with Nikola Jokic and Serbia. And he comes off the bench as the fifth guy. He's not the first guy off the bench, second guy off the bench. He's the fifth American that Steve Kerr puts into the game coming off the bench. This is Kevin Durant, for heaven's sakes. He's a two-time NBA Finals MVP, one of the best players of a generation. And he comes off the bench fifth for Steve Kerr and the American coaching staff. And so he returns in a bench role, but right away, had said he wanted to be aggressive. By the way, I have no idea why he didn't speak to the media after the fact, but there's no Kevin Durant audio. He goes 8 for 8 in the first half. He hits all 5 of his 3-point attempts and finishes with 23 points in 17 minutes. Team USA was down when he got on the court, but he and LeBron James and some of the others, just really neat to watch them thrive in that environment and the fans going crazy there in the arena. So yeah, Kevin Durant, I wouldn't say the team needed rescue, but he was there providing that spark in the first half when they were still languishing behind the athleticism and kind of the quick step of the Serbian players. Even though Jokic wasn't extremely effective, this wasn't triple-double Jokic. He was seeing a lot of different defenders run at him. Joel Embiid, sometimes LeBron, Anthony Davis was out there as well. So he's getting a lot of fresh bodies on him, and he just never did take over the game. But to see what Kevin Durant did and the spark he provided and how excited he and LeBron were to play together, yeah, that was a lot of fun. So between the two of them, they combined for 44 of Team USA's points.
You know, I think we just bring out the best in one another. And we're very seasoned to the FIBA games. You know, we've played a lot of international basketball when it comes to the Olympics or World Championships. So, you know, to have KD on our side, to have KD on my side, it's a treat for sure.
It was incredible, but not surprising given what I've seen from Kevin in the past. I've said it before, I think he's the most skilled basketball player I've ever seen. The game just comes so easily for him, and a long layoff like that doesn't seem to bother him. And you know, he was brilliant tonight, obviously just shifted the game as soon as he got on the floor.
Yeah, how many times have we seen that with Kevin Durant, where he returns from an injury and it's like no time has passed at all? He is that gifted. Now, Steve Kerr did indicate that he was not putting KD on a minutes restriction, but he was a little nervous, trying to be cautious in bringing him back because KD was a warrior in the 2019 NBA Finals when he tried to come back from a calf injury. He wanted so desperately to play in the finals against the Raptors with the Warriors. I think at that point, a lot of people knew that it was going to be his last run with Golden State. So he comes back from a calf injury, maybe earlier than he should have, and he ends up tearing his Achilles. And Steve Kerr had a front row seat for that and wanted to be careful. But it was clear that Kevin Durant was locked in, and his smile told the whole story. As for Steph, he had 11 points, 3 assists, 3 rebounds, and yeah, knows what it's like to play alongside KD when he's locked in.
His nickname is Easy Money for a reason. He loves the stage. He's the all-time leading scorer in USA basketball history, so it's just amazing to watch him. You know, I got to watch him up close for 3 years as a teammate, and to do it again, he's special, so we needed it.
So one of my favorite Olympic moments from the weekend, for sure, Kevin Durant's huge smile and his near-perfect show. But I was wondering, along with a lot of you, where is Jason Tatum? And I would, whatever the camera would pan across the bench or show the bench reacting to, I don't know, KD or LeBron James or, and LeBron was great as well. There's really nobody on the Serbian team who could stop him when he puts his head down and acts like a freight train and drives right through the lane. And I don't suppose they need to feel badly about that, because there's a, I would say, 90% of the NBA that wouldn't stand in his way or can't stand in his way anyway, even at 39 years old. So every time they would show the bench reacting to KD or LeBron or any of the other guys on the court, I would look for Jason Tatum. He was there. He was the last guy to come out of the locker room at halftime, and there was some speculation that maybe he had a physical injury or some type of physical limitation that was keeping Steve Kerr from using him. But actually, that wasn't the case at all.
It's tough, but Jason handled it really well. I talked to him today before the game that it may play out this way, just with Kevin coming back and the lineups that I wanted to get to. But that'll change. You know, Jason's going to play. Every game's going to be different based on matchups. He's a total pro. He's, you know, first team All-NBA 3 years in a row. I felt like an idiot not playing him. But in a 40-minute game, you can't play more than 10. You really can't. And you know, so I think he's an amazing guy, great player, and handled it beautifully. And you know, he'll be back out there next game. I felt like an idiot.
Of all the things I thought I might see with Team USA in its opener at the Olympics, DNP-CD. So did not play, coach's decision, next to Jason Tatum's name is not.
DNP-CD-JT.
Yes. Really, I understand what Steve Kerr is saying in theory, but it was a freaking blowout at the end. For heaven's sakes, they won 110-84. You can't put Jason Tatum in the game for the last 5 minutes.
No Tyrese Haliburton in the game either.
Okay. Yes, that's also a big name and an all-star in the NBA, but it's Jason Tatum.
No, yeah,
First team All-NBA and a now defending NBA champion.
No, yeah, I understand. JT and Tyrese Haliburton are in two different levels when it comes to NBA players, but I mean, you just said it was a blowout game. Like, they couldn't have gotten 5 minutes in?
No, I agree.
3 minutes?
Everybody should have played in this game. The atmosphere, the excitement, the fans were so into it. And come on, how often do we see NBA teams empty their benches at the end of a game because they're waving the white flag or because it's already in the bag? And it's not as though you see, I guess I can't speak for Jason Tatum. I don't know if that would be disrespectful But I can't imagine when it comes to the Olympics and repping your country that you would rather sit on the bench than be quote unquote disrespected by being thrown out there in the final 5 minutes. If for no other reason to get your feet wet, it's your first game. Yes, they've had a few weeks to play together in various places, Vegas, Abu Dhabi, London, but it's the Olympics and he's Jason Tatum. And that doesn't make any sense to me at all.
It's funny, when the game was winding down and, you know, it started to become a blowout, as we just said, I started to think to myself, oh, man, Team USA is going to have to start emptying the bench. And then I quickly realized, wait, their end of the bench pieces are still stars in the
yes,
NBA. So
absolutely.
It is a little bit of a weird position for Steve Kerr. Yeah, he's going to have to empty the bench in some of these blowouts. Hopefully he doesn't hurt the egos of some of these guys who aren't playing, not playing as many minutes as they'd like in Paris.
There are fewer minutes, so 8 fewer minutes than an NBA game. But still, if you consider that Kevin Durant only played 17 minutes, I know you have Bam Adebayo in there as well. Not that Jason Tatum is below Bam Adebayo or should be on the food chart, food chain, food chart, depth chart, food chain. Have you ever heard of a food chart? If you haven't, it's a new thing for the Olympics. Anthony Davis played under 20 minutes. Now, his teammates, so Jrue Holiday started, and Derek White came off the bench, and the two of them were great when it came to the defense. They combined for 4 steals. They make life miserable for opposing backcourts, really, for anybody. I mean, Derek White, he's great when it comes to the defense, and I was so happy for him to get out there. Remember, he was a late addition because of Kawhi Leonard and his inability to play, but I don't understand why you can't get those guys in there for the final 5 minutes. I mean, really, it's not like you take a step down or a step back if you put Jason Tatum on the court. Come on. When the game is no longer in doubt, if Steve Kerr is really worried about matchups and rotations and everything else, at the end of a game where you're leading by 15 points, are you really worried about, oh no, if I put Jason Tatum in, somehow we might not maintain this level of play? Come on.
I felt like an idiot.
Therein lies the answer. So he did own up to it, and Steve did say he spoke to Jason before the game and that Jason knew, but I think it's kind of inexcusable.
So now, who?
I'm not Steve Kerr, but... So who
gets the next DNP coach's decision at the next game?
Maybe, just maybe, it was a little bit of gamesmanship, you know, because the Warriors beat the Celtics in the 22 NBA Finals. No, I'm just kidding. I'm sure he's all about Team USA right now. Although, it was Dwayne Wade along with Noah Eagle on the NBC broadcast, and they were speculating that Steph Curry was campaigning to go back on court because, obviously, Steve has been his coach the majority of his career, and he was campaigning to get back out there on the court once he'd been pulled, I think, initially.
That's Steph Curry, man. Doesn't get enough court time. That's that Wardell.
If I'm Steph Curry and Steve Kerr is the head coach, oh, I might be doing a little campaigning on my own. I would think for sure that's something that I would also be asking. I'm not above that. I'm sincerely hoping that Jason gets 20 plus minutes in the next game, because that was kind of a bummer. Other highlights, Coco Gauff ends up winning her first match. Remember, she not only was carrying the flag for Team USA on their boat as they were entering the, downtown Paris, out of the Seine, as they're on the river. She not only got to hold the flag, but also this is her Olympic debut at 20 years old, because 3 years ago when she did qualify for Tokyo, she got COVID and had to bow out of the Olympics. So all kinds of stories like that all over the place. She's obviously on the younger end of the spectrum. How about Rafael Nadal, who has won his match as well, his first match in the Olympics, and now has a battle with Novak Djokovic. So here we are getting two of the greatest players of all time, not for a French Open title, because they are playing at Roland Garros, not for a French Open where he's won 14 singles championships, but now he and Novak Djokovic will compete in the Olympics. That same court where they have met so many times. 60 different meetings between them at the tour level, and now they're going to add Olympics to that resume. How about that? So that's going to be worth watching. Also in tennis, for those of you who follow it, Andy Murray has said this is absolutely his last event as a pro. And he, I don't know if he was playing singles or not, but the last gasp that he had was with his doubles partner, who they were playing on Sunday against the team from Japan, and they saved 5 match points. So they were on the brink in the first set. They came back to win it. Or no, they were on the brink in the second set. They came back to win it, forced a third set, faced 5 match points, erased them all before coming back and winning and extending his career at least one more match. So it was pretty incredible. And I know they're in France, but he's a Brit. And so the fans were all about cheering for Andy Murray and extending this opportunity to see him at least one more time. And the emotion pouring out of him, as you can imagine. So these are some of my favorite moments from the Olympics so far. At A-Law Radio, our Facebook page too. Glad to connect with you. Let's see, coming up. This whole Canadian soccer scandal is even higher up the flagpole than maybe a lot of people expected. So we'll touch on that again. And, yeah, Tua, Jordan Love, they get paid. Great for them. But the more quarterbacks that get record-breaking deals, the more Patrick Mahomes is underpaid.
Whatever.
Good morning to you. It's Monday. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.
They're down a player. We need some goals.
Mistake by Hendry. Here's Smith. Berger with the save. And the United States retake the lead. Mallory Swanson. Smith. Turn and a deflection on the shots, hits the post and goes in. Slice of fortune.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
On NBC, Team USA in women's soccer has qualified for the quarterfinals, already in after 2 wins, both by 3 goals, which means they've got the wins and they've got the points. And so the Americans have clinched a spot in the knockout stage. That's the call on NBC. Sophia Smith, the young phenom, I mean, she's part of the reason why U.S. women's soccer is likely to return to that superpower status that it enjoyed for so long. She is amazing. And she had a pair of goals. One that was on a perfect cross in front of the net from Mallory Swanson, who later had a goal of her own. But the other was one off of the, I think it was the left foot of, right foot of Sophia Smith. And it caromed off the inside of the far post and had a perfect angle and just then was able to bounce into the back of the net. And a keeper was way out of position, of course. So she was terrific. The attack, as much as there were some turnovers that Germany took advantage of, the attack was aggressive. In fact, as I'm watching, I'm thinking, why can't the men do that? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Now, the big scandal still in women's soccer revolves around the nation of Canada. And if you hadn't followed the story over the weekend, now Bev Priestman, the head coach of the Canadian women's soccer team, is suspended for a year. So the Canadian Olympic Committee is watching all of this play out and even now allowing Canadian soccer. So that's the soccer federation. And then the Olympic Committee is above that and governs all the sports. But they're watching this investigation, following the investigation, and kind of weighing in as the soccer federation has suspended Bev Priestman for a year. And not to mention an assistant coach, an analyst as well. And they're still trying to figure out how high up the food chain this goes. Now, FIFA had to step in as well. I suppose you could say it's a positive that the Canadians were not completely bounced from the tournament altogether. But Bev Priestman was sent home, so they don't have their head coach. And they were also docked 6 points. So even before the tournament started, they were minus 6. Instead of starting at 0, they're starting at minus 6. Now, they have won a pair of games, including against France, and that one in stoppage time. So some pretty dramatic moments. They had to rally past New Zealand. That was the nation that spotted these suspicious drones flying over their practice. But Canada had to rally past New Zealand and then needed stoppage time to beat France. But now they're back to even, right? So now they're at 0 points after gaining six in those two wins. And if they beat Colombia, I think it's Wednesday is the game, the Canadians will also be onto the knockout stage. And some of the quotes, we don't have the audio. I wish we did. We've looked for it. We can't find it. But some of the quotes from the Canadian players themselves, they're angry. They're frustrated. They feel like it's them against the world, as you can imagine. That's a refrain that I've seen multiple times in print. But this is the suspicion that is revolving around them, right? Because New Zealand reports seeing a couple of suspicious drones flying, not just one, but two, flying over what was a closed door practice session. Obviously not a closed roof practice session, but a closed door practice session. And authorities were able to find footage of the practice and arrest a Canadian assistant coach as well as an analyst with the team. So they were immediately sent home. Then FIFA suspended Bev Priestman for a year, along with these other two. And so now you've got FIFA and Canadian soccer kind of coming down hard, as they should. I mean, this is something that apparently, according to some reports, had been going on even before they won their gold medal in Tokyo in 21. And the American women, some of them have even indicated they knew about it or had heard about the fact that Canada was likely to fly a drone over your practice, so beware. So the Olympic Committee Chair for Canada is David Shoemaker. And yeah, he's not only is he disappointed, probably a little embarrassed, but really can't come to the defense of Bev Priestman because they just don't know all the details yet.
One of the key pieces of information was the conclusion from Canada Soccer that she needed to be suspended based on their accumulation of facts. I've seen some of them, some of the information they have, and we've gathered some additional information ourselves that made me conclude that she was highly likely to have been aware of the incidents here in Saint-Étienne. We continue to be shocked and disappointed. I think that's the language that I used earlier in this week to describe it. And we feel very much frustrated, as I'm sure all Canadians do at this point. Yes, there now appears to be information that could tarnish that Olympic performance in Tokyo. Makes me ill, makes me sick to my stomach to think that there could be something that calls into question what I'm sure so many of you have heard me say over the course of the last 3 years. One of my favorite Olympic moments in history, that women's team winning that gold medal.
Yeah, Canada grabbed its first ever gold medal in women's soccer going back to 2021 in Tokyo, beating Sweden in that championship match. And if you remember, Team USA finished out of the medals. And so they were denied, and it was this incredible story for our friends to the north. But now, I mean, David Shoemaker is admitting that this is awful because that was one of his favorite Olympic moments in all of their nation's history. And so I hate it for the athletes. At the same time, you got to wonder, did the athletes know anything about it? I mean, there are questions whether or not they did. They swear they knew nothing about it, but you have to ask. There's no way that you can't ask. And I've seen a couple of quotes from Priestman as well. Hold on, let me see if I can pull them up again. And all she would say is she was absolutely heartbroken for the players. So she said this through her lawyer on Sunday, of course. She's absolutely heartbroken for the players. She did apologize to them and the entire nation of Canada and told the players to, quote, go out today and show the world what you're made of. She wrote, I wish I could say more, but I will refrain at this time given the appeals process and the ongoing investigation. And then the Canadian players were asked whether or not they accepted her apology. And they actually wouldn't say yes, as you can imagine, feeling like she's put everything they've worked for in jeopardy and potentially could get them stripped of those medals in 21, too. So this, at this point, the Canadian players are saying we're not cheaters. The head coach is gone and suspended. There's lots of investigations still going on. As it comes more and more open, and more of these different countries and different pieces that are kind of dropping into play. You definitely have this kind of pall that's cast over the tournament, and it's not what the Olympics want. Oh my gosh, I just got this tweet. It's fun. Are you ready?
Oh, yes.
I'm going to assume he's Canadian.
Oh, yeah.
Your views on Canadian players are ridiculous.
Oh.
Coaches are different to players. Know your facts. The coaches went rogue.
Oh. I was told Canadians were very nice people. That wasn't
know
a very
your
nice tweet.
Facts. The whole point is that we don't know all the facts yet. That's the whole point. I'm not saying that the players flew the drones. What I'm saying is I don't know that they weren't, that they had no idea.
So this individual knows all the facts, but yet
apparently
the Canadian IOC doesn't have all the facts, and yet the Canadian Federation, the Soccer Federation, they don't have all the facts, but this guy does?
He definitely does.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to make sure.
And
I
if you're
right.
wondering, he also has just a shadow silhouette.
Oh, it's not even his real
it's
face?
It's not even his, no, not
oh,
his face.
Oh, interesting.
Not his face at all.
I don't know, we had those in Canada, too.
Very influential, though. Very influential.
Oh, I'm sure.
You know that on Twix and on social media, there are experts everywhere. You find that out. The more time that you spend on it, there are experts everywhere. All right. Online, A-Law Radio, if you too are an expert. Also on our Facebook page, After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Have I mentioned that the Chiefs are getting Patrick Mahomes for the bargain basement price of not even a top 10 highest paid quarterback in the NFL? Here's our latest sports update, and here's Peter Schwartz.
To go for the first down. Play action fake. Tua deep down the right side. He's got a wide open receiver. It's Tyreek at the 10. He's got it at the 5. Touchdown.
Here's the snap. Jordan Love looks downfield. Throws off the back foot to the end zone.
Yes, oh,
the
shoulder yes, catch. Yes.
Touchdown. Dontavian Wicks on the post. And the Packers lead it 20-0.
Here's Amy Lawrence.
Oh, does that whet your appetite? Does it float your boat, baby? On the Dolphins and Packers radio networks. I know. We still have 5 weeks to go, 5.5 weeks to go until the NFL season officially kicks off with games that count. But this week, the preseason begins because August 1st is Thursday. It's also the Hall of Fame game in Canton. So that should wake you up and give you a little bit of juice on your Monday morning. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. We didn't have a chance to react to it because it happened on Friday, but both Tua Tagovailoa as well as Jordan Love get paid. So no more hold-ins, no more sit-outs, no more hold-outs, no more sit-ins. They're good to go. And then you've got two more quarterbacks who slot ahead of Patrick Mahomes. When it comes to most expensive, quote unquote, or highest paid in the NFL.
Whatever.
So first the reaction from Tua and Jordan, because this is neat for them, right? When it comes to Tua and his family, they've been through a lot of ups and downs. Remember, even going back to Alabama and the competition with Jalen Hurts. And then when he leaves Bama and gets to Miami, what is the refrain every year since he's been there? Oh, are they trying to trade for another quarterback? Are they trying to trade for Tom Brady? Are they trying to bring in another QB? Then he has that awful season where fails on all parts, where he's out there on the field when he shouldn't have been. He sustains a second concussion on national TV for all of us to see. And even though he comes back later that season, they end up removing him for the rest of the year. So it's really a wash of a year, not to mention a scary experience for Tua and his family. And so he works his way back. He gets stronger, more durable. He learns how to fall when he gets tackled, only to have his own teammates talk about how he's fat. So he comes back last year. They get Tyreek Hill to go along with him, as well as Jaylen Waddle. And he ends up throwing for the most passing yards in the NFL. Still, though, questions about whether or not they want to commit to Tua long term. Oh, well, I think they do. In fact, they give him the richest contract in Miami Dolphins history. 4 years, $212.4 million, which averages to $53.1 million annually, just more than what Jared Goff is making. So it puts Tua in the top five, just ahead of Jared Goff. And he, not only does he show up at practice and grab the foghorn and start yelling, "Show me the money!" Like Jerry Maguire, well, like from the movie Jerry Maguire. But he thanks the fans and he's all excited. He's happy. But he also wants everyone to know that Mike McDaniel went to bat for him and was a big reason why this went through before they started the season.
You know, word gets around quick, and I don't think he knows that I know, but I've been told from several birdies that are here in the facility that are upstairs as well, you know, that he went to bat for me the day that I went out and practiced 11 on 11, 7 on 7, before we went on that little break, that he went to bat for me with, you know, our owner. And I won't go into details of things that I heard were said, but just know, like, he is what he says. He says what he told me, and he did what I was thinking he would do for me, and not just for me, but for any other player. You know, so I'm very grateful for that.
Sorry, does that have to further? What deal are we speaking of? Oh, Tua's deal? Yeah. So it's whatever, the deal's done. That
whatever.
Was kind of, you know, the oh hope.
Gosh.
I'm fired up for the organization, really fired up for Tua, and the work he's done to receive something like that. I think it's a cool validation for sure.
Whatever. He's so random and yet so funny. Do you guys remember when he was hired and he FaceTimed Tua while he was on the plane on the way to Miami and told him it was going to be the best day of his life? Well, so far, he is on track. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. As for Jordan Love, he makes slightly more per year. So he is now tied with Trevor Lawrence and Joe Burrow. $55 million per year for a guy who's logged one season. And yet the Packers know they found their man. So 4 years, $220 million, which averages out to a tie for the highest paid QB in the NFL.
I'm truly blessed and grateful and humbled to be put in this position. It's taken a lot of hard work, dedication, and sacrifices, not only from me, but from so many people around me. You know, I want to say thank you to the Green Bay Packers organization. Also my agents, Dave Mulligetta, Andrew Kessler, for being able to finalize this deal. I want to say thank you to my family for their love and support. They've been with me through it all. I also want to thank my teammates and coaches for being patient with me throughout this process. None of this is possible without them. I'd like to thank our fans. I feel like we have the best fans in the league.
There's no absolutes in this business, as you guys know, and but certainly he was a very gifted player. As we got to know him in the pre-draft process, you know, who he was fit what we wanted here, you know, from a culture perspective. We thought he had a, you know, really, there was nothing he couldn't do that we were going to ask of our quarterback.
I'm offended.
Oh, hey, Aaron, you shouldn't be, since you chose to go to New York and the bright lights in the big city.
Bums.
How did the Packers know that you would only last four snaps into the 2023 season? It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence. Ooh, Manny getting into Jay's favorite folder of Aaron Rodgers drops. It's been discovered.
I mean, who can say that they won MVP of COVID?
That's something. So now Trevor Lawrence, Joe Burrow, Jordan Love, $55 million per year. We mentioned Tua, 53.1. Jared Goff, $53 million. Justin Herbert, $52.5 million per year. Lamar Jackson, 52. Jalen Hurts, 51. Kyler Murray, $46.1 million per year. Deshaun Watson, 46. Kirk Cousins, 45. Oh, hey, there's Patrick Mahomes. Tied with Kirk Cousins for $45 million per year. Are the Chiefs getting him for a bargain basement price or what? Here, this is a fun fact. Of the top 10 highest paid quarterbacks in the NFL, they have a combined three Super Bowl appearances. No rings. Oh, and then there's Mahomes, tied for 11th with Kirk Cousins. He's been to four Super Bowls and has three rings and two NFL MVP awards. See, I know that Patrick cares more about winning and would not trade those rings for what Jordan Love has or Trevor Lawrence has. Hell to the gnaw. But at some point, the Chiefs are going to have to address this. The fact that he is playing for the fire sale price, everything must go, going out of business sale price of $45 billion per year. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence on Facebook as well as on Twix at A-Law Radio. My favorite Olympic moments from the weekend, Tori Husk and Leon Marchand in the pool, for sure. Let's see. Simone Biles, those dazzling routines. What else is new? Tom Cruise taking selfies with fans of all ages from all nations. That was pretty funny. Love seeing what we got from Kevin Durant and his return. Certainly appreciated the equestrian. Oh, my gosh. Really love seeing two American women battle in the fencing gold medal match. And how about Celine Dion? Her triumphant return, a surprise that was worth keeping until the very end of the opening ceremonies. We'll talk to you tonight. It's After Hours with Amy Lawrence.